Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Nampak Limited pre-close period call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal for an operator by pressing star, then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Erik Smuts. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to Nampak's voluntary trading update for the 5 months ending 28th of February 2023. And I think please note that, as is customary, the main focus of this pre-close update was not on any specific financial results, but rather directionally on the underlying trading conditions in the market and, of course, other key matters. I've got no intention to give you a verbatim repeat of what's already written in the announcement. I'm sure you've already read it. So I'll only be giving high-level commentary on its contents and hopefully provide better insights regarding the critical factors at play. Of course, we will also be opening the floor after my feedback for questions. So let me get straight into it. I think at a very high level, the trading conditions, I think, can be summarized as follows. Overall revenue continued to grow, but at a slower rate than before. Our beverage can business showed mixed growth. In Angola, we experienced strong growth, but in Best Can South Africa, despite very strong demand for larger can sizes, our own mines producing those sizes are already running at full capacity. While in Nigeria, unfortunately, conditions have deteriorated, mainly a result of the very high cost of forex and the cost of imported goods going up as a result, and therefore impacting on demand. At this point, I'm happy to say that our turnaround is definitely gaining momentum. Operationally, it's going much better, but unfortunately, our customer base is under severe pressure due to reduced customer spending, and I don't think that is necessarily going to change in the short term, but there are some other positives on that side that I'll speak to a bit later. Revenue declined at both our plastics and paper businesses, despite the demand for certain categories remaining strong. The reasons were similar to the decline in demand at the food, in other words, lower consumer spending power, but were also impacted by electricity and raw material shortages in Zimbabwe, as well as the impact of course, translating all of Zimbabwe's results at the much weaker closing rates. And you will note that the Zimbabwean dollar has really weakened since the comparative period. And as you know, when you're in a hyperinflationary environment, you do not translate at the average rate, but at the period ending closing rate. So that had quite a big impact on not only revenue, but overall results. Besides weaker trading conditions, the most significant impact on our results for the period came from forex losses incurred in Nigeria due to a larger extraction of in-country cash and the increasing gap between the informal and formal market rates. I think that is something that we also discussed in quite a bit of detail during our update at the end of January. I can assure investors that potential measures to address this risk is having our full attention, and we are actively involved in negotiations with customers to find an equitable solution, high-level details of which are included in the announcement. The other significant factor, of course, was a 45% increase in net interest costs, and this resulted from higher net debt levels, but also much higher interest rates. And all of this resulted in a small net loss after tax. What is not included in the results yet is the potential impact of impairments. we are providing a very strong signal to investors that very material impairments in both Angola and Nigeria are likely to result from the massive increase in WACC rates due to higher in-country risk premiums. The detailed impairment models are currently being run and will be reviewed by our auditors before the release of our half-year results. So as a result, we do not have the final numbers of those impairments yet, but it is fair to say you can do your own calculations based on the sensitivity analysis we've disclosed in our previous results. I think when WACC rates increase in these countries by give or take 5% each, you can imagine that it will have a very material impact on our equity base. The various turnaround initiatives at the Food and Plastic SA are definitely gaining momentum, both internally, in other words, operationally, and through some of the restructuring that we've done, but also through very productive negotiation of trading terms with customers and suppliers. The results of the results of these is unfortunately not showing yet in our results year to date, but they are likely to have a very positive impact on results going forward. And of course, we will update the market further, not only during our results, half-year results presentation, but definitely during the process of relaunching the rights offer shortly after the release of our results. The divestitures from Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, and our General Metals business in Nigeria have also gained a lot of traction. As reported, we've received offers for various assets in these territories, and I'm confident that we will not only stop the bleeding, but also realize up to 250 million rand of cash through this process. So this should be a very positive step for the group in de-gearing our balance sheets. We can also confirm that our debt advisors have prepared a restructuring plan. This has been presented to our lenders in support of various debt extension requests. And of course, we are currently in very active negotiation with these lenders regarding various debt extensions. As you know, there's a big chunk of debt due by tomorrow, and we will be updating the market as soon as we have reached an agreement. I have to warn, these things always go to the 11th hour, if not the 12th hour. So our team are very actively working on that at the moment, and we believe that we are making very positive progress. We must reiterate, though, that the rights offer is still an essential element of our restructuring plan and a condition for the refinancing. The negotiations for this refinancing will be taking over the next couple of months, and I think we hope to provide detailed feedback to the market shortly after the announcement of our half-year results, or at least during the first half of June. These things do have a tendency to take slightly longer than one anticipates, but of course it is in the interest of both us and our lenders to conclude this as soon as possible so that we can relaunch the rights offer process. In order to demonstrate the board's commitment for the execution of the restructuring plan, we've appointed a chief restructuring officer and also constituted a restructuring committee to provide both support and oversight to these processes. We're very confident that both the CRO and the newly constituted restructuring committee will give impetus to the sale of assets and also take benefit of the improving deals environment. This concludes my comments on the trading updates, and I will now open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star and then two to remove yourself from the list. Again, If you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. The first question comes from Jacobus Cilliers from All Weather Capital. Please proceed with your question, Jacobus.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, clearly. Go ahead, Jacobus.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Eric. Maybe three questions from my side. The first one, can you just define the role of the restructuring committee? I just want to understand their role. Then just a second question. On the previously communicated size of the rights issue, there was up to 1.5 billion communicated. I just want to understand if that's still the size being considered or if it's smaller than that. And then do you have any indication of the timeline for that? Thanks.
Okay. Jacobus, the role of the restructuring committee, as we said, is to support the chief restructuring officer. This committee will not limit him in any way. The CRO does report directly to the chairman of the board, but the committee has been constituted to see what can be done, not only to assist the CRO in the execution of his duties, but of course, also to provide oversight on that. So I think, in short, the restructuring committee is there to help the CRO, but you'll note that they also have another function, and that is all other restructuring initiatives in the company. In other words, things like cost-saving initiatives, operational improvement plans. So one half of the functions of the committee is there to provide support for the chief restructuring officer, and the other half is there to provide support for myself in the turnaround of the various businesses and the cost reduction programs. Okay, that's the first question. The second one was, I think you talked about the size of the rights offer. Yes, we said it's up to 1.5 billion. We've always said that, you know, we would like to reduce that as much as possible through the sale of assets. Now, the restructuring plan that is being presented to lenders, I can't comment on the details yet because, you know, that is subject to negotiations from the lenders. So I can't commit to any size for the rights offer at this point in time. That will be announced in due course. We can definitely not commit to any amount at this stage. I think that's all I can say on the size of the rights offer. And then your last question, if you can maybe just repeat that.
Just on the timeline of the rights issue, but maybe if I can just sneak in the just a follow-up as well. Has Chief Restructuring Officer taken away any powers from the CEO or the board in any way? If you could just verify that for us, please. Thanks.
Okay. So first timing and then the powers of the CRO. So I think first in timing, so we had to stop the current rights offer process because you know, there's certain timelines that you can't go beyond in terms of doing the extraordinary general meeting. After we had to first adjourn and then cancel the EGM, we will have to reissue a rights offer circular and sorry, EGM circular first. So all of that will only commence after we've announced our results, because we, you know, our previous results are now so old that, you know, we did not believe you can use them as the basis for doing a rights offer. So you will now have our sort of fresh results, if I can call it that, for the half year, and then we will reissue. So the intention will still be to conclude that process before the end of September. So, if you take the normal timelines, if you relaunch this process, let's say early June-ish, you know, there's a normal timeline that flows. It means that you will complete the process just the end of August, but definitely before the end of September. In terms of the powers of the CRO, No, he does not limit the powers of the board in any way. He is there to act independently from the chief executives, in other words, myself, and that's to give the lenders the confidence that we will act on that sort of agreed restructuring plan. So the chief restructuring officer is not to is not meant to limit my authority in any way, but it is there, he's there to assist and act independently from ourselves to give that additional comfort to the lenders. So, you know, where I might be more, let's say, emotionally attached to some of the assets and the projects that where we were involved in, it is meant to give a more objective view to not only the board, but also to the lenders in order to sell assets and execute on the rights, not just the rights offer process itself, but also the rest of the restructuring plan. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Dumisani Ngzolu from All Weather Capital. Please proceed with your question, Dumisani.
Thanks. Now, hi, Eric. Just two questions from my side. And maybe just on the cost base, can you just give us a bit of, you know, some color on what you guys are doing around, you know, trimming or reducing this cost base? I mean, how big is the actual opportunity? And then just around working capital release, I mean, can you guys... just if you can, I mean, just give us an indication of potential working capital, further working capital release, if it is still possible. Thanks.
Yeah, the Masonic, just keep in mind, we can't comment on anything outside of what is included in the trading update. So I can't give you more color or start giving amounts and so on. I think all we can say at this stage is that we are very serious about reducing costs. And hence the formation of the restructuring committee. I think by doing that, we wanted to demonstrate to the market and the lenders how serious the board is taking the whole issue of cost, sort of reducing costs and selling assets. So I think I can only comment that far.
Dumisani, do you have any further questions?
Yeah, just one more perhaps around the debt. I mean, I guess it's since, you know, Eric, you can't divulge numbers, maybe you can just give us some sense of direction where things are headed. I mean, just in terms of the discussion you are having with your lenders around reducing that dollar or that USD denominated debt, I mean, is the kind of, I want to say, you know, light at the end of the tunnel in that discussion and part of your, say, broader discussions in terms of deleveraging, if you can give us a sense of where you guys are with that. Thanks.
Let me tell you what I can say. First of all, it is in everybody's interest to resolve this in a way that does not destroy value for anybody. So we've got very supportive lenders that are prepared to refinance the group under the right conditions and terms. And of course, there are other players that assume that they do not want to form part of the refinancing consortium or the group of lenders. So, you know, there are different parties, so that's got different interests and strategic intent. So, you know, part of what we always wanted to do was to simplify and reduce the number of lenders in the group. So that is something we are working towards. As you know, there are certain lenders that indicated they want out, and therefore there's interesting, let's call it intercreditor discussions going on at the moment to see how the different parties will accommodate each other. But I definitely believe there's light at the end of the tunnel. I think the debt advisors has been very complimentary about what they've seen inside the businesses, and you know, we have a good business. There are definitely businesses that need improvement, we certainly need to improve the return on capital that we are currently achieving in all our businesses, and hence the formation of the restructuring committee. But yes, there's definitely light at the end of the tunnel. We're having tough negotiations. We're having late nights to get things through, but it's definitely light at the end of the tunnel, and it's certainly not a train coming our way. It is it's the end of the tunnel, or that's definitely what the way I see it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from James Henry Twyman from Prescient. Please proceed with your question, James.
Yes, thank you very much. So I've got four questions. The first two are in terms of the non-core asset sale that you're talking about. Is this something new, or is this just the process that was underway before? Because obviously what was going on before wasn't achieving very much in terms of sales. But is there a new asset that you're planning to sell? And then the second thing was, you talk about the winding down of unprofitable operations, plural. Could you just give us some idea of scale? Is this interesting, or is this very, very small? That was the first
question. Okay, so James, let's stop with those two for now. Let me answer it, and then we'll give you a chance to ask your other two questions. So your first one relates to, is there anything new in the sale of assets? And I want to say, no, there's nothing new, but the environment in which deals are done, definitely improving. So we have received renewed interest in some of these assets. So, we never stopped looking at potential disposals. So we definitely have active processes in play as we speak, and we'll continue to do so. But of course, we've upped the amount of available to assist in this process, the CRO, of course, being one of those. So we can't quite confident that there's a much better likelihood of success on these. So that's the first one. Then the divestitures or the winding down of businesses, there we refer to. Well, I think the first one is our crate business that we're getting out of. We mentioned the sale of 40 million rand worth of equipment, and I think one can expect there's more secondhand equipment still to be sold from that business. So, I think that is not just gaining momentum. I think there's some successes already. The others refer to the businesses in East Africa and General Metals Nigeria. So General Metals Nigeria, we are in the process of running down that business or running down inventory. So we're not placing orders for not new raw materials. And as we run down and sell the last product from the raw materials we have, we will then be selling the property because it there's a lot of value that's actually in the property itself. And yes, I think we spot progress there as well. We've got a very small business in Ethiopia, as I don't think one is likely to realize much value from that. I think that business has not been very active operationally for quite some time. So I think that is just part of the simplification program. And then you've got businesses in Tanzania and Kenya. In Tanzania, we've already ceased operations, and we are in the process of selling the property. And then in Kenya, we are in negotiations about either one of two things, either sell the business as a going concern or otherwise, again, a valuable property that we can put onto the market. And all of those processes are very active, and we are confident that subject to regulatory, you know, improvements, etc., that we will get to conclusion of those fairly soon. You know, is that going to be before year end? So in Africa, you never know, but at this stage, I think we are making good progress.
Okay, thank you. But so back to the question. There's obviously, this is obviously quite a big new development in terms of lots of these assets. It would be useful to have some idea of scale of what these things are worth, you know, in terms of whether it is actually something for us to be, you know, taking interest in or not.
Okay, so maybe just, you know, I think we mentioned in the update that the divestitures and sale of assets in East Africa, that we realize, we believe it's, you know, up to 250 million rand and maybe even more to be realized from that. The other sales that are, of course, other businesses and, you know, nothing is off the list. We've always said any business where we get a reasonable offer, we will consider the sale thereof. And that was a commitment we've made not only to our lenders, but that is part of the restructuring plan that's been put forward to the lenders.
Okay, so East Africa, Kenya, the sale is potentially quite significant.
Well, I mean, I mentioned 250 million grand. I mean, it's not small money, but we I think the other asset sales we hope to achieve much more than that.
Okay, and then my other two questions were: firstly, in Nigeria, you've got some big FX losses. There were big FX losses last year, and that was because of a big move in the shadow exchange rate, and the contracts weren't reacting to that. My understanding was that that was resolved and that the sharp move in the exchange rate has sort of stopped. So I'm interested to know why the FX losses are quite so big.
Okay.
And then secondly, the debt at the end of last year was 5.5 billion. You don't mention debt in this. I'm interested to know whether that's obviously risen significantly.
So let me start with the FX losses itself. So a lot of it has got to do with timing and let's call it the phasing of the to what extent we extracted cash at in the first 5 months of last year versus the first 5 months of this year. So we managed to extract less cash in the first half of last year, but, and this is important, because of the difference between the formal rate and the informal rate being much closer, the cash that we extracted, a bigger portion of that landed in, you know, let's call it South Africa or the Isle of Man, where in the current periods, we've extracted more cash from Nigeria, but the amount that finally arrived offshore was a lot less because of the higher losses incurred because of that higher difference or that increased difference between the informal rate and the formal rate. So, and hence you've seen this big increase in Forex losses. And I think we discussed previously in detail how the pricing mechanism with customers work. And the negotiations that are currently in progress is to make sure that we reduce the risk of having or incurring losses between the time of invoicing and then a changed rate at the time of receiving it. How do we do it? Through two different mechanisms. The one is to reduce the payment terms itself, and the other one is to put in what we term a true-up mechanism to make sure that you reprice at the time of receiving payments. So in other words, you invoice at one conversion rate, but if there's then a change in that conversion rate between invoicing or delivering the product and when the customer pays you, there's then a true-up to that latest rate. What it does not do, though, is that once you've received the cash, we still have the exposure until we can actually find dollars in the market to get it out. So that is a risk, of course, we need to manage. That's not something you can pass on to your customer, but we are trying to limit the overall exposure, and those are the negotiations that are currently taking place. I hope that clarifies the question.
Thank you, Eric. Yes, but to conclude on that one, my understanding is that if the exchange rate is relatively stable, then the losses you have to take because of the difference in exchange rates when you take the money out is offset by the fact that you're making an extraordinarily high underlying operating profits in the operations, so that the two cancel each other out. That doesn't seem to be the case here, though.
No, that is the case. So keep in mind the way you account for it. So don't get confused between the accounting treatment and the net profitability. So at a trading level, you are being compensated in the price for that higher exchange rate when you do invoicing and in future for the true up. But the loss that you incur, you still show as a separate line item, and that is the number that we are disclosing here as the Forex loss.
Yeah. I would have thought that would mean that you wouldn't be making an overall loss for the business, because although you're getting this huge
So in a perfect world where there is perfect matching of inflows and outflows, etc., the two will offset each other. But when you are still extracting cash from the, you know, from prior periods, etc., there is still that exposure, and that is what had quite an impact in the current period. Going forward, if you can sort of match your inflows and outflows, or keep the timing closely correlated, then the net impact of those should be limited. So, in the current period that did not happen, there was still, let's call it older, funds that were extracted. The small timing differences can have quite a significant impact. It could even result in a profit. Because if the rate is actually improving, we might invoice at a higher rate, and even after a true up, if we then can buy dollars at a lower rate, you know, you can benefit from it. But you know, generally the trend goes the other way, so hence why we are trying to put all the measures in place to limit the exposure, but we can't eliminate the exposure.
Eric, thank you very much for this. Thanks.
I think you had a fourth question as well.
Did I? No, the other one was just on the debt. You didn't say anything about
yes.
The debt.
Yeah, so we're not going to comment about the debt levels at this point in time. That we will comment on in detail for our half-year results. But like I say, at this stage, we're not really commenting on specific financial numbers. The only one that we felt we needed to give you very clear guidance on was the Forex losses. That's a known position and so on. And then the other one that we also felt was very important because of the potential size of it was the potential impairments, although, of course, we don't have the numbers yet.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Carl Gernetsky from News 24. Please proceed with your question, Carl.
Yes, good afternoon. Just quickly, if you don't mind explaining what is driving the impairments in Angola and Nigeria, am I correct in assuming this is because of the sharp rise in inflation and interest rates?
Yep.
Thank you.
Cole, I'm going to ask my Chief Financial Officer, Glenn Fullerton, to explain that. It's quite a technical reason, but I think quite straightforward in terms of the numbers and its potential implications. So, Glenn, if I can ask you to respond to that question.
Sure. Thank you, Eric. The major reason that's causing it is the increase in the weighted average cost of capital in those jurisdictions, particularly in Nigeria, where that economy has been downgraded twice in since September 22 when we reported last. The weighted average cost of capital in Nigeria has increased from 12.5% in dollar terms at September 2022 to 17.2%. So that's a 4.6 percentage point move, but it's a 38% movement. Now, in our financial statements for September 2022, on pages 48 and 49, we set out tornado graphs that show the implications of movements in different variables when we're valuing those particular assets. And if you go and have a look at those public documents, a 1 percentage point move in the weighted average cost of capital within Nigeria equates to approximately 200 million move in valuation in that business. So you can go and do the maths yourself on that. And in Angola, it's about 100 million for every 1 percentage point move in that economy. So it's a relative measure of risk internally in the country. What we do use is a Damodaran website. It's a worldwide accepted input mechanism for determining the weighted average cost of capitals. And what we do is apply those to expected future cash flows and compute what the value in use of those businesses are. And then we compare that value in use to the underlying carrying value of the assets in the company. And we compare those two numbers. And if the value in use is lower than the carrying value, it will result in an impairment. In the Nigerian business, that is historically had quite a significant amount of goodwill. At September 2022, there was still an unamortized portion of goodwill of around 1.9 billion rand. And any potential impairment of that goodwill would go against that carrying value and obviously hit the earnings numbers. It would not hit the headline earnings per share numbers because those are added back. But you cannot unimpair a goodwill impairment. Where there's an asset impairment in future and the WACC rates drop and cash flows improve and the value of the asset goes up, you can unimpair an asset impairment. So I think it's an important distinction. And I think we have referred to that in the announcement where we separate a goodwill impairment from an asset impairment. And there is a material difference, as I've just explained.
Thank you, Glenn. I think another factor that's also impacting, in particular to the potential impairment in Nigeria, is what's happening in the market. So fairly recently, they discontinued the old Naira notes, and they replaced them with newly printed notes. Unfortunately, there's a shortage of those notes in the market that has severely depressed sort of liquidity in the market and as a result, economic activity. So we've seen quite a drop in overall demand in Nigeria. How long that's going to last, we don't know, but I think it's fair to say that the overall trading environment, not only for beverage cans, but in the general economy has deteriorated. So therefore, we had to build in those projections of future, lower future volumes into our models, and that's got a knock-on effect on the potential fair value. It results in the fair value in the end, a reduced fair value, and therefore a potential higher impairment.
Thank you, and for your patience.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, just one final reminder before we conclude. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star and then one. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star and then one. We will pause to see if there are any further questions before we conclude. The next question comes from Michelle Gumede from Business Day. Please proceed with your question, Michelle.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Eric and everyone. I just have a few questions of clarity. Could you advise what chunk of the debt is due tomorrow that you'll be advising in the SENS statement on? And just to reiterate an earlier question that was asked, are we not creating some sort of confusion or two centers of power when we have the CRO directly reporting to the chairperson? Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm going to ask Glenn to respond to your first question related to the amount of debt that are due tomorrow, and he will also comment on what was due on the 28th of May. But let me respond to you the second part of your question related to the two centers of power. So the concept of a chief restructuring officer is not well known or well understood in the South African market. This is a concept that originates from the Chapter 11 situation in the US. But in South Africa, it's got a very different meaning. In South Africa, I think it is generally something that they, as a positive measure, to assist in the execution of certain duties. So the separation of power and the independent reporting to the chairman is there to give the lenders the comfort that the person will act, not specifically just in terms of the historic way we've done things, but that he will have a focused approach and let's call it attention span that is directed at the execution of the restructuring plan. So in a way, what it allows the business to do is for the chief executive and his team, the normal executive team, to be released from the complications of doing the restructuring and the refinancing of the balance sheet, but to focus on the management of the company itself. So I think there's a very good reason why you want to separate the operational side of the business and the financial restructuring. So that's the essence of it. It is not meant to create confusion. I think it is meant to provide clarity in terms of who's doing what. Glenn, if you can respond about the question related to the amounts that are due today and the 28th of May. In other words, our short-term obligations.
Thanks, Eric. Michelle, that's a good question. In the financial statements at September 2022, under the Note 5.6, we disclosed the short-term liabilities, and those included the 1.35 billion that was due in terms of the rights issue process, and that was due to be settled on the 31st of March 2023, which is tomorrow. And that was in line with a rights issue process that had been designed at that point in time to deliver those proceeds. Now, clearly there was a process that had to be halted in that regard, so we're in discussions with the lenders to address that repayment date, which would be aligned to a process that addresses the new rights issue process. The second portion that is due is the residual value under the US private placement notes. This was 10-year money. There was an original $115 million, which we had paid several years ago, and the balance that's due now on the 28th of May 2023 is $55 million, and at current exchange rates, it's the equivalent of approximately 1 billion rand. So those are the two amounts that are currently in the short-term category of what's due. We also have to address the debt extension milestones in the current package, where those have been extended to the 31st of December 2023, and this is part of the negotiation with the funders to set down an appropriate debt package for the business going forward that will be announced to the market ahead of launching the rights issue.
Thank you both.
Thank you. At this time, we have no further questions. Mr. Smuts, I'd like to hand over to you for closing remarks. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. So thank everybody for your attendance. I think in closing, I would like to say that clearly the current trading environment in South Africa is not ideal. I think that does not come as a surprise to anybody. Consumers are feeling the pressure of higher fuel prices, higher food prices, and very high interest rates. So I don't think that is what we should be focusing on, despite the fact that it had quite an impact on some of our trading results. More importantly, I think, yes, there will be big impairments coming, but that will not impact cash flow or debt levels. I think that is just narrowing the gap between the current net asset value shown on the balance sheet and where our share price is currently trading at. So I think a lot of that's already been anticipated in the current market cap of the company and should not come as a surprise to any analyst or investors. I think the important bit here is that we are working productively with our lenders to find a solution to put the balance sheet on a more sustainable basis, to restructure it. And there are definitely assets that we've identified within the portfolio that we know we can fix and turn around. And there's others that we said, hang on, let's get out of that, and we are making success on that. So we've got a very clear way forward in terms of the restructuring plan. The board has shown its commitment to put in the resources to back up that plan. So I think going forward, it's been a long, hard, bumpy road for a lot of our investors and shareholders over the last couple of years, especially since COVID happened. But under improving trading or deal-making environment, we are confident that we can execute on this restructuring plan, and we remain fully committed. Thank you very much for your support to date, and we will try our best to make sure that we deliver on this plan. Thank you very much, and have a good afternoon.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you very much for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.